excited about this next conversation. You know, we were talking throughout the week about how humanity seems to be changing. And I think there's this power behind fiction. There's this power behind novels that allows people to make a point outside of the realm of reality. And in a way, it allows the reader to then re-examine reality with a new set of glasses and see where their situation really, really plays out. I mean, we've seen it with the Orwellian 1984. We've seen it with Atlas Shrugged. I mean, there's a lot of works out there that are supposedly fiction, and they become reality. So this next conversation is going to be one that you're not going to want to miss, I guarantee you. We have with us Mark Diehl. And he has this book that I had in my hands hours before the show. I'm reading this book. It's just absolutely fascinating. And it's beyond thought-provoking. That's all I'm going to say. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Well, thank you, Josh. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I mean, the book, it's 17, book one. And the concept is just absolutely fascinating, this idea that we're kind of changing as a species. But I'm going to let you tell us about that. Give us kind of the synopsis as a starting off point.
Okay. My 17 series is fiction, and thank you for pointing out that a lot of times when you want to make a social point, you have to do it with fiction because people can't see it in their own life. And that's what Orwell did. That's what Ayn Rand did, is to put what's really going on. At that time, they saw the government growing in these huge new directions, and it was frightening. And they said, well, here's how I'm going to show what is happening. And my book is The New World Order, protracted into the future. 17 is when there are 17 billion people in the world, but almost none of them are conscious because they're all plugged in with their corporations. They're just brains serving as a giant computer bank. And 17, the series will trace humanity as it evolves, socially, historically, culturally evolves into a corporate species.
Now, you know, the scary thing is, I mean, a lot of people have made this connection, and if you're active on social media, you always see red pill, blue pill with a Matrix sort of meme to it. But we really are moving towards this civilization where we're becoming less human and more just a mass of bioengineered organisms.
Certainly. And it doesn't... there are different aspects that are going on. You know, there's the whole genetic engineering thing, but there are cultural developments as well. You know, I came up with a lot of this when I was living in Asia, and what I realized is Asian cultures are stricter than Western cultures because they have this population density crammed in to very small spaces with very few resources. And 1,000 years ago, they had a higher population density and fewer resources, so they developed a way for everybody to sort of collectively get what they need, and that was a top-down militaristic hierarchy. And I saw it in military, you know, going all the way back. Look at the ancient Romans. Anybody who came up with the most severe, strict, controlling, top-down hierarchy had the most effective military, and if you didn't do that, that one wiped you out. What's happening now is we've moved from the military and the government realm into the business realm, the realm of humanity. And now those organizations, that obedience, that cult of obedience, has taken over the business world.
Well, it really has. You know, just looking at it in the past 100 years, when most people were self-employed, and now we pick candidates on who can produce the most jobs, and we love to get these employers that hire 50, 100, 150,000 people. I mean, those are considered the good jobs, but those are exactly what people 100 years ago would have feared as a nightmare. I mean, we are changing, and it's almost like we're developing a herd mentality.
Right, and you know, think about what did lazy mean 100 years ago, right? 100 years ago, somebody who was lazy meant he didn't want to plow his own field, mend his own fence, tend his own livestock. A lazy man 100 years ago meant he was choosing to just die. and not take control of his life, what's a lazy man today? A lazy man today is someone who can't put up with 20 levels of management above him controlling his every move. So all of our terminology has changed, just like in Orwell. You know, we don't look at these things the same way as we used to.
So I got to ask you, when you were writing this, did it kind of scare you to realize where we were heading?
Yeah, it especially scared me when I was living in Asia. You know, in Japan, they say that the tall blade of grass gets cut. You know, and I think Japan really is the world's most corporate society. And I remember I have a picture that I took in a traffic jam. We've all been in traffic jams. You look to the horizon and it's just brake lights. But every single car in my photograph, every one, is a white four-door sedan. Because nobody wants to stand out. Nobody wants to be that tall blade of grass. Everybody wants to fit in and do their little piece of the big machinery. And yeah, this that was terrifying to see that.
That is terrifying. That's absolutely terrifying. I remember this one time, and this is a little tangential, but you made it come to mind. I remember this one time I was helping a guy, and he had a window washing business, and he hired me to come in and kind of consult and grow his business. And he took me around to his clients, and we were in this this data center for a huge, you know, Fortune 500 company. And it was massive, probably 300 feet by 400 feet, and it's full of cubicles. And I just out of frustration of seeing what I was looking at, a bunch of people who are just animals, I tapped on the glass, and these little heads start popping up like lemmings because they all wanted to see what, you know, what was the disturbance in the force or something. I mean, it was just crazy.
Right. Absolutely. And, crazy. You know, I had that same experience when I came back from Asia. I went to law school. I got a job in a Chicago firm that was a small sort of, you know, churn and burn kind of litigation firm. And I made a name for myself. I got brought up to the big leagues. And all of a sudden, it was exactly like being in Asia. It was that strict conformity. And, you know, if you weren't wearing the same kind of shirt as everybody else, you were a bad worker that day. And you felt it. You know, and that was what really got me. And eventually I had to just stop doing it and write a book about it because it was so overwhelming.
Do you think the thing that prevented us from really becoming that ant colony society in the past, the thing of distance and just time via communication, do you think because the world has changed and effectively shrunk so much that it's now possible that we become a global anthill?
I think it's definitely happening, and it's been happening ever since they started with the military thousands of years ago. You know, this is an ongoing process. I think in America we've been a little more insulated from it than in most of the world because we have a tradition here where we value individuality, we value uniqueness. That's really not been the case in other cultures, and if you look at where resources are distributed, you can see a clear pattern. The higher the population.
Hold on one second. I want to see that pattern, but I want to get to it right after the break. Don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be back right after this. The author is Mark Diehl, the book 17, book 1. The website, armyofthedoomed.com. Now, Mark, before the break, you were talking about how the allocation of resources kind of creates a trend. Can you pick up where you left off, please?
Sure. I mean, if you think about it, we're stranded on a desert island, and there aren't enough papayas to go around. And some of us gang up together, and we say, you know what? We're the biggest, strongest group on this island. We're going to hold all the papayas. And if you want to have one, then you better do what we say. And that's what's happening on a global scale. It's been happening throughout our history, and it's finally turned into something that can take over the entire world.
So do you think this is a reality that's coming, or do you think that it's a potential reality based on the patterns that you've seen?
I think it is. We are definitely in the process. I think that if nothing changes, the world I've created for 17, which is a centralized, very, very powerful government controlling everything for the benefit of giant multinational interests that are themselves controlled by international financial markets, is our future unless we veer off that course.
And without getting political, I mean, because to me it really doesn't matter. I mean, every party seems to be doing the same thing. If you look back over the last 100 years, we've seen that. We've experienced it. You know, we used to have over 60 car manufacturers in the United States. Those got gobbled up in big conglomerates. Now there's three. And then, you know, we used to have massive amounts of healthcare options, and whether you agree with the current trend or not, I mean, that's really dwindling down to about 9 providers. You know, I mean, we're kind of concentrating everything into less and less entities, but those entities are becoming larger and larger, and they control more of our lives, don't they?
Right, and they're not necessarily American, and they're not capitalist. And that's the key that we need to remember, is that when you have an organization that does something that benefit, you know, you provide some benefit, you provide health insurance, you provide a car, something like that. When the market rewards you for that behavior, that's capitalism. Once your reward becomes political power over other people, that's outside the capitalist realm. Now you're talking about concentrating power the way feudalists used to do, fascists used to do. So it's important to understand, because when we say big companies and things, Ayn Rand was right. That was our alternative to communism. But she was she wasn't looking at the whole picture, which was institutions, whether it's a prison, whether it's a government, whether it's a corporation, giant institutions cannot help but dehumanize and standardize and demand conformity. And so that's what we're headed for now. We have these giant institutions, and it doesn't really matter whether they're chasing the bottom line or they're controlling people with force, because all that means is we're pulling back one level. We can say, well, we'll have a government to control people with force, but we're going to keep all the papayas.
Unreal. Okay, so tell us a little bit more about the book itself. I mean, you have a main character, 19-year-old waitress. What? Tell us about the book.
So the idea in 17 is that if you're inside these corporations, you're safe. You live in a safe area. You get to eat healthy food. You live more like a person of today's America might live. However, the other side of that is they demand total, complete obedience and working around the clock. And anyone who doesn't do that is ejected. And when you're ejected in a world where nothing is outside the corporations, when you are outside the corporations, it's a sprawling ghetto that stretches for hundreds of miles. So Edie, the main character in 17 Book 1, is a waitress who is on the fringes of the corporate world and gets into a conflict with someone who is from a family that still controls a lot of clout within the upper echelons. And the corporation that he is part of starts to hunt her. And she is living in this ghetto trying to survive against this massive machinery.
And there's so many parallels there. I mean, with the government now having so many alphabet soup agencies, you could easily make the parallel that the government is the corporation and these agencies are doing the exact same thing. I mean, the rate of victimless crime, the million-plus people every year that are charged with a felony, even though there was no victim, it's just insane when you actually step back and look at where we are.
Right, and, you know, that's what separates my work done today from Ayn Rand's work when she wrote, is now you have that other source of power. You know, you have that concentration of power that deals with just accumulating money, accumulating wealth.
Well, it's a scary place to be, because the alternative is no longer being taught. I mean, I have a textbook on my shelf from 1929. It's a seventh grade mathematical textbook, and it teaches you in that textbook in seventh grade how to hire employees, how to set up distribution. It taught you how to be independent. Now when we look at what we teach our kids, it's the seventh grade textbook is 2 inches thick, it weighs 12 and a half pounds, and it's just hundreds of pages of repetition, repetition, repetition. And that's exactly the mindset you would have to create in order to institute a society heading the direction of the one that you paint in the book.
Right. And because there's this we've separated out now the money part from the control part, but the control part is just as real as it ever was. So in 17, if you've started reading, you know that federal agents are not called agents anymore. They're called angels, because we're infused with this feeling that this is right and this is proper and this is the way it should be. And everybody kind of drills this into your head. This is the way it's supposed to be. And federal now, in 17, is spelled with a capital F. Because it's that important. It's that close to theology to believe in your government.
And you know what's so freaky about that is we're actually heading in that direction. There are so many people who, you know, when there's a problem in our life, they turn to government for the solution. And if you are a religious person, you'll notice the parallel that people are replacing some sort of God or deity in their life with government. Government has become the deity for millions of Americans. If there's a problem, ask the government. Want some help? Ask the government. If things are going right, well, yeah, that's because the government did something good. I mean, it's really freaky when you step back and look at the parallels between theology and this devotion to the federal government.
Right, and I carry that one step further in 17 and say, well, yeah, but also our corporate training programs are going to have that. You know, you're in this corporation because God wants you here. And so there's this, you know, because I modeled a lot of the corporate training mechanisms that I put into 17 on Chinese prison camps. Because that's what they do. They call it re-education. And you go in and you're not coming out the same person you went in. We're going to totally rearrange you. Now, maybe you say, well, you know what? If somebody's a serial killer, that's a great idea. But an accountant? No. Where do you draw the line? If you have this power to just take over someone's mind, where do you say, well, we're not going to let you do that? And we don't say that.
We don't say that. We have no check and balance. And, you know, and you add to that the capability that this sort of mindset is given via the advancement of technology. The ability now to change genetic structure of a human and have that change passed down for three generations. That's just beyond freaky. The fact that there's going to be 10 drones per county flying over our head. I mean, it's getting nuts what we're really seeing around us.
Absolutely. And nobody sees it, and that's why I had to write in fiction. Because people will say, oh, well, you know what, that's going to be. I can see how that might be in the future in some distant. But, you know, they don't see the little steps that we're taking now. But if I take us forward a little bit and say, well, okay, here's what happens after 6 of those little steps. Here's what happens after 12 of those little steps. Pretty soon we've got something that people say, oh, you know what, that's not where I want to be.
Well, Mark, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. I mean, this is a book that I think people need to read. It's a great read over the holiday season.
Tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.